Hello and welcome to the Lancet podcast. Richard Lane here on Thursday, April the 14th. Today, the Lancet publishes its latest series on stillbirths. We publish 6 series papers, 2 original research articles, and 8 comment pieces, which are all available from thelancet.com today, April the 14th. And to encapsulate the main messages from the series, let's now hear some audio from the London press launch held yesterday, April the 13th. You'll first of all hear the Lancet's editor, Dr. Richard Horton, who then introduces the main author of the series, Dr. Joy Lawn, from Saving Newborn Lives, Save the Children in Cape Town, South Africa.
Let's start off, first of all, with Joy Lawn, who is Director of Evidence and Policy at Saving Newborn Lives, Save the Children from Cape Town in South Africa. Joy.
I have the remarkable honour of standing for 69 different people, and particularly for the group that have worked on new estimates for stillbirths. So I just want to acknowledge all of them and their hard work. And to say that almost exactly 6 years ago, we had a Lancet series on neonatal deaths. And Richard may remember that when we first started writing that series, we actually had stillbirths included. And we were politely asked to remove all the stillbirths from the neonatal series. And I actually think now that that was the right decision. I think that was a wise decision. I think the world wasn't really ready to have stillbirths count. We didn't have the data that we have today. We didn't have a different political and social recognition of that this is a woman's problem. And I think we have that today. I think the time has come. And I think that the encouraging thing is, if we look 6 years ago to that series that said there are 4 million neonatal deaths that were in the shadows, that those neonatal deaths have come forward. But what's the big difference for how you could get neonatal deaths on the agenda and why stillbirths aren't? And that is really about the fact that stillbirths don't count in global data. If you're a baby, the mother goes through 9 months of pregnancy, or maybe less if the baby's coming out prematurely, the baby comes out and dies. If the baby dies even within a few minutes of birth, that baby counts in our global data. If that baby dies during the time that the mother's in labour, that baby's never counted in our global data. And that's why, one of the main reasons why stillbirths have been hidden. There are also very important social issues and recognition and the privacy of grieving that has been hidden. But this is a really critical issue. And because of that, because they don't count in our framing of global data, because they aren't in many of the global metrics, because we haven't had systematic collection of data by the United Nations system. United Nations collect data every year. They ask every country for maternal deaths, for child deaths. The neonatal deaths are done as part of that. But this is the first ever time in this exercise that WHO has been a fantastic partner in, where countries have been asked to report their stillbirth data. So this is something that already the series has changed. Data has come from countries into an exercise and has been put together. So data doesn't count newborns, but also goals don't. So much of the focus on global health over the last decade has really been driven by the Millennium Development Goals. And the heart of those 8 goals are Millennium Development Goal 4, about child survival, and 5, about maternal survival. And particularly over the last year, we've seen a huge increase in interest for the maternal survival goal. Stillbirths hang closely with both those goals. Now 41% of the child survival goal are newborn deaths. That's huge. And yet those deaths even can be misclassified with stillbirths. If you're in a mud hut in rural Africa and a baby comes out and nobody's there to assess, was it a baby who had died before birth or who dies just after birth? So by not counting stillbirths, we're also messing up the data for the Millennium Development Goals. So stillbirths are often missed in national and international health policy and programs, and yet they count for families. You can't doubt that a woman who's been through 9 months of pregnancy, if the baby dies just before birth, doesn't count that, and she counts it if the baby dies after birth. That's not listening to women. And so the reasons why this has been missed is partly a social and perception issue, particularly of grieving, and we'll hear some very interesting and new research from Frederick Fron on that later. But it's also a data issue. And so what we set out to do was to say, we're going to get the best data. We're going to get the widest partnerships and the best data to put this together, not just for the size of the problem, because having a big problem doesn't mean necessarily that things will move forward. You also need to understand what will work for solutions. So what's new? I'm not going to take you through the methods of how we did these new estimates. I don't think that's the purpose of this media briefing. We'd be very happy to talk about that afterwards if necessary. But I would really stress that because we asked countries for data, we were overwhelmed, in fact, with the amount of data that came back from countries. It tripled the size of the database. In fact, we then had to redo everything and, in fact, push the data of the series forward to really make sure we incorporated all that data. And we have data from over 1,100 data sets over the time period 1995 to 2009. We've been able to really improve the modelling. And I think these data are as good as you can get, given the limited data, particularly from some countries where there just is no data available. We also have new estimates of how many babies die while women are in labour, more advances on the causes, and then how can we improve that data. One critical thing for stillbirth is we all need to talk the same language. The word stillbirth is a parent's word, really. It's not a technical word. The technical word would be fetal death. And then we have different cutoffs for measuring or counting those fetal deaths. Part of the problem, really, is that in different countries, different cutoffs have been used. Internationally, the WHO recommend that we use a cutoff of a baby 1,000 grams about 28 weeks, the last trimester. And this is because globally, in countries where you don't have neonatal intensive care, most of these babies aren't going to survive. But as we know, I was a neonatologist here in the UK. You know, even when I was practicing here in the UK 20 years ago, 25-weekers survived. Now, the majority of 25-weekers survive, so it's not sensible to have a 28-week cutoff in the UK. The cutoff in the UK is 24 weeks, and in Australia, New Zealand, and the US, it's 20 weeks. And so what we also just want to make this point, that if you look at the data for WHO international comparability in high-income countries, that often isn't the data that's used. So, for example, in Australia, if you use the WHO definition, you get around 13,000 stillbirths a year. But if you use USA, if you use the USA's own definition, that's 27,500. And that 27,500 is the same as the number of infant deaths in the US. So this is a high-income country problem as well as a low-income country problem. And if you think how often infant deaths, cot deaths, other problems in the US are mentioned versus stillbirths, it's a relatively neglected problem in all countries. So to give you the output from this modelling exercise, we have a map that we see for many global health problems. We have much darker colours in Africa signifying the highest risks there and in South Asia. We have a total of 2.6 million stillbirths per year with a range of around 2 to about 3.8, so a big range. And the uncertainty doesn't come from the rich country data, it comes from the places where most deaths occur. 98% of these occur in low and middle income countries. The country that we have found with the lowest stillbirth rate, Finland, and then Singapore. The countries with the highest rates, Nigeria and Pakistan. And the countries with the biggest numbers, of course, are driven by those with huge populations. So these 10 countries alone account for 2/3 of the world's stillbirths. And in fact, the top 5 countries account for about half of the world's stillbirths. So this problem is really a huge number. This number, 2.6 million, is more than the total number of AIDS deaths and malaria deaths put together. Now, it's not a competition with AIDS and malaria, but if you think how many times you hear about those in the media versus stillbirths, you can see that the data isn't really driving our dialogue here. We need to change the dialogue. And the critical and really probably most distressing part for women is stillbirths happening during labour. 1.2 million deaths a year, women going into labour with a live baby and finishing labour with a baby that she can't take home. And this is a problem that's really distributed very unevenly. So if we look across these bars, this is the stillbirth rate across the regions of the world. And what you can see in developed regions, so in high-income countries, the uncertainty is very, very tight. And then if you look here where the burden is high, the uncertainty is extremely wide. Many of these deaths are happening at home, and many of them aren't counted in official systems. And if you look at the dark green part, this is the proportion that are happening during birth. So in South Asia and sub-Saharan Africa, stillbirth is really dominated by care at birth. And this is the first thing that needs to be done. And in fact, it's the most preventable thing. If you look in developed countries, it's almost non-existent. So indeed, the risk of an intrapartum stillbirth for a woman in Africa compared to a woman in the UK is around 50 times higher. And in fact, globally, more than half of all the stillbirths in the world are actually happening for rural families in Africa and South Asia. And I, myself, my mother worked in the bush of northern Uganda. She had an obstructed labour. She had to go into a bush hospital in northern Uganda. No running water, no electricity. And after about 24 hours, they managed to find somebody who'd sort of seen a cesarean section once and cut her open from top to bottom. And I came out alive, and remarkably, she also survived. And that story, I'm standing here today because somebody shouted. Somebody brought in care, somebody organised a cesarean section. But, you know, this year, 1.2 million babies, that won't happen for. In West Africa, the cesarean section rate for rural families in many countries is almost unmeasurable. It's effectively zero. So this is a critical thing that can move forward and must move forward. So what are the causes of these stillbirths? Well, we have a problem with stillbirth causation. What happens is every couple of years, people get bored with someone else's classification system, and we've got 35 classification systems. And these are very difficult to map onto each other. And more, they're dependent on a very high level of investigation in high-income countries and don't really match the case that we're talking about globally. The majority of cases where births are happening at home, the information is maybe from a mother that you're asking several months after the episode what happened, and needs to be much simpler. And this is a critical thing in moving forward. How are we going to move forward a way to get much more systematic causes? But despite the confusion in the classification systems, out of the data we still see very clear causes. Childbirth complications would be number one. Infections is really neglected. But syphilis still causes deaths in southern Africa. Other maternal conditions, and here particularly hypertension and diabetes, and this links with the transition towards non-communicable diseases that we're seeing in all of these countries. Fetal growth restriction, which really is critical in high-income countries, but also missed in low-income countries. And congenital abnormalities. And to emphasise here that actually it's a relatively small proportion of stillbirths in the last trimester that are due to congenital abnormalities. And so these clearly link very strongly with maternal and neonatal deaths. So where are we going with stillbirths? What's happening with the global trend data? This is the first ever time to have trends. We have trends from 1990 to 2009. What's changed? Globally, we're seeing that stillbirths are coming down, but it's 1.1% per year on the global average. And that's much lower than the rate of reduction of maternal deaths, which is now at 2.5% per year. Wonderful news that's just come out over the last year of increasing progress for maternal deaths. Also less than the child death progress. And yet, within that, there are countries that have made fantastic progress. So in the material you were given out, we rank countries not just by their numbers and their current rates, but by their rate of progress. Colombia, Mexico, China have all halved their numbers of stillbirths over this 14-year period. It would be interesting to dig deeper into why that's so. Sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, unfortunately, have the biggest burden. They're the lines here at the top. And the slowest rate of change. And, you know, if we don't do something different, if we carry on with the rich countries getting better, the middle-income countries really improving, of course, it's easier to halve from the rates the middle-income countries were at 14 years ago. It's more challenging as you get lower, but it's still possible. If we do nothing, then by 2020, 90% of stillbirths are going to be in these two regions of the world. We have to do something different. So what can we do? So that was the question we posed ourselves as a team. What can we do? What would make the biggest difference? And what's feasible to do? And so what we have done is used the Live Save tool, the LIST tool, which is a well-established tool used by United Nations and countries to look at live save modelling for mothers, for babies, for newborns and for children. And we've been able to add a module for stillbirths. So this both allows us to show you how many lives could be saved by different interventions now, but it also allows country governments to use this to decide how to prioritise. This is free software that you can download, and really we think is not just useful for Lancet, but for programmes too. And so what have we find. Out of huge work on systematic reviews led by Professor Zulfikar Bhutto of the Aga Khan University in Pakistan, we have 10 interventions that we believe make the cut for stillbirths. They have evidence and they will really also be likely to be feasible in these settings. And if you look at these 10, none of them are remarkably new science. They're things that are well recognised. Periconceptual folic acid reduces neural tube defects, affects congenital abnormalities. Malaria in pregnancy, syphilis in pregnancy both have an effect. Hypertensive disease, diabetes, and then care at birth. And if you look at these, we're not saying anything new. These are packages that are being promoted for women and to save them, and for babies and to save them. And if you put all these together and you reached every woman and child, every woman in the high burden countries with these, around 1.1 million stillbirths would be averted. And the biggest group, not surprisingly, is this care at birth, childbirth care, almost 700,000. But don't neglect also the syphilis here, 136,000 stillbirths. Lower cost, very feasible, often not done well. And in fact, by not counting stillbirths, that's the main outcome for syphilis in pregnancy treatment. It doesn't really have an effect on maternal, it doesn't have a lot of effect on neonatal. So this is critical to count. And if we look at putting that together, we're not standing here to say people should do something just for stillbirths. If you did these interventions, how many mothers would be saved? And that's the bar in red here. And how many neonates, the sort of brighter blue bar, and then how many stillbirths, which is coming out as kind of the light green bar there. And in total, we have around 1.1, 1.2 million stillbirths. We have more than a million newborn deaths, and we have 201,000 maternal deaths. And so you're getting a triple return on investment. But at the moment, we're not counting the stillbirths. And the big one here, the huge bar, is the childbirth care. As the world moves forward to do more for childbirth care, we need to count the stillbirth outcome. And if we don't count the stillbirth outcome, we're not making the case effectively. So here's a cost analysis looking at care at birth. If you look at the investment for obstetric care, providing C-sections, providing the whole ability to provide effective obstetric care, it's not cheap. Sometimes we stand here for global health and we say it's simple. If it was simple, we would have done it a long time ago. But it's important. But if you only count the maternal outcome, it's about $54,000 per death averted. But if you add the babies, then that becomes highly cost-effective, under $4,000 per death averted, which meets all the criteria for cost-effectiveness in these countries. And the total running cost, at about $10 billion per year, is the cost for the maternal and the newborn and the child outcomes for care during pregnancy and at birth. This comes out at about $2.3 per person per year in these countries, highly affordable. And it's especially affordable if we count the stillbirths also as an outcome. Thank you.
Dr. Joy Lawn from Saving Newborn Lives, Save the Children in Cape Town, South Africa. And just before we go, I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Niall Boyce. Medicine and technology, what's going on?
Well, The Lancet has published quite a few things in the past year on the subject of medicine and technology. One of my favourite papers from last year was the paper on text messaging for HIV patients, which was an excellent paper and caused quite a stir. Information technology is having a huge effect every day on healthcare all around the world, and the new column, which is going to appear shortly in The Lancet, is going to cover all aspects of information technology, from things like information, communication and discussion, and also what we seem to see every week, which is a new app for some sort of medical purpose.
And in addition to that, there's a Twitter feed, which is already live. Tell us about that.
There is a Twitter feed, which is live. The Twitter feed is called The Lancet Tech. And it's run by me. So if there's anything which anyone has which involves technology, involves medicine, and it's something which we might be interested in, then please tweet me. Well, they can also email me, and my email address is niall.boyce@lancet.com.
Good, and we look forward to reading the first column. I think June is the first one.
June should be the first one, yes.
Excellent. Many thanks indeed, Dr. Niall Boyce. And that concludes this week's podcast. Many thanks for listening. See you next time.